bounced through the doors tonight, sort of did a quick checklist of how I felt, and pretty good, you know, making eye contact with people, going around saying, how you doing? You know. And I think as the readings went on, sort of felt myself like a level going a bit more like that. The smile was a bit less, you know. Someone over there sort of sent me a smile, and I did that sort of thing where you kind of go, and try and hold it together. Then I realised, you know, that the mask was falling off my face, and which would have made me get off my face a long time ago. You know, like Leah talked about, like, embarrassment and social situations, anything really, any excuse to use, you know. And when I got here, it was pretty obvious to me that the choice was to, either get clean or die, really. You know, carry on using and die. So I went for the death option a bit longer. and it didn't quite work out, you know. And then I was in this treatment centre, and I remember once before I was leaving, I was like, right, I'm ready to go into the big, wide world, you know. And one of the counsellors came up to me and said, well, we don't want to see you here again. Because, you know, like it says in the reading, jails, institutions, or death. And this is just another institution. And I went, what? You know, and so I thought, well, that's, you know. And on the way back to London, I remember a bit like coming in here, I was all cocky and confident, you know, waving to other cars. How's it going? You know, nice day. What are you doing at Christmas? You know, sort of stuff. And by the time I got to London, I was absolutely so frightened. I just had no idea how I was going to cross the street, you know, at the time, buy a pack of cigarettes, you know. It was like all my life something in some way had held me together. And, of course, it cost me everything by the end, you know. There's just no way I could sort of hold myself together anymore, I realised. And so, anyway, that night I used, because I said I'd go for the death option. And you know what it's like for us. We make a decision to use, and within 10 seconds, it's like 10 using people around us going, so what are we doing? You know, it's almost like this weird, it's like the opposite of what happens in recovery, you know. And I think the next morning after I came out, you know, and I was sat about 7 o'clock in the morning on a park bench with some homeless people, and one of them looked terrible, you know, like really, really awful. And he turned around to me and went, are you all right? You know, it's the last thing I expected. You know, I was wearing, I had some Prada on, you know. So anyway, I started getting some special brews about 7 o'clock in the morning, and the day progressed, you know, and all the things. It was almost like in that day, it was almost like a summation of everything I'd done in my life. Using all happened, you know. That my partner at the time walked in this pub was with this all over this other woman, yeah, and just went, and walked out again, you know. And then as I walked out, I met this guy who I scored with the day before going into treatment, and we went to Shepherd's Bush and picked up, and went to this toilet in Chelsea, and I remember. There's things you obviously start hearing, you know, you start hearing the information about powerlessness, and I think that's a big word. Never heard it before, really. You know, people don't say it, people don't use it. Powerful is like this idea, this illusion. So anyway, I learned what powerlessness was that night, because we went to this public toilet in Chelsea, and He shut up this heroin, and then I shut up this heroin, and instantly my head sort of went, what are you doing? That's not even going to touch the side, you know. That, you know, and it's true, you know, one is too many and 1,000 doesn't quite do it. Yeah. So I remember sort of going, right, oh, well, yeah, I have to get on it then, quick, you know. And I could feel myself, like, at that time, sliding down the wall into death. As I was going over, you know, as I was going over, but it did not matter a fuck, you know, because that's what I'd chosen. That was my choice. And what I realised in that moment was that I had no other choice than to do that. Okay. So I you know, lights out for me, and I came to in an ambulance, and what happened was the guy I was with saw me go, ran out, like you would do, I suppose, and just went. And so there's a guy reading the newspaper who was looking after the place, and it's, oh, that's it then, time to lock up. So he locked up and went home. And on the way home, he went like this, and realised he'd forgot his watch. So he went back to the toilet and saw my Prada shoe sticking out underneath the stall, and then called an ambulance. And I really made it through it again by the skin of my teeth, you know. And I just remember this thing of, like, I was back to where I'd always known, you know, just feeling like, I didn't really feel anything. It was like my head was full of just all this stuff, like this negative stuff just going round and round and forwards and backwards and whoa. And they said to me, look, we've sort of, you know, your partner's been in and told us a bit of your history. We think we should put you on a script, like, straight away for the rest of, you know, you can have one now, please, take one for the rest of your life. Or, you know, you went to this treatment place, so they have, like, the NA program, so you can go there, you know. And I thought, you know what, I sort of remember this idea about the first step being to do with surrender. And I just went, you know what, I think I'm going to go to NA. And at that point, I remember just the level of noise in my head lowering enough for me to go, wow, there's something in that. You know, that had never happened, and it was because I'd made another choice for the first time in my life. You know, actually, what I did was I took step one, I think, there and then. I admitted that when it comes to it, I have no control over this. And, you know, what I suppose I've gone on to learn around here is that, you know, once I admit and accept that, then that is what opens the door to some kind of sanity, which comes from outside of me, you know. And that was my first experience of that, really, and it was really encouraging, because I went to a meeting, went to two meetings the next day, and I sat next to this woman, and she was a counsellor around the corner. She was in NA, she was a counsellor around the corner. And I went to see her a little bit before I went to this treatment place, you know. And she was going like, well, you know, it'd be good to go somewhere and get some help. And I was thinking, well, surely you should be telling me that I should just go to meetings, you know, not get outside help, you know. Anything you can do to find the difference, you know what I mean? Look for the differences all the time. And she was sat next to me, and she was sharing that she was in that meeting by the grace of a higher power, because last night a boss said to her, you've got to stay over a bit longer at work. And she said, oh, but I've got a plane to catch. And I said, I'm really sorry, you know, it's like 3 days before Christmas, we've got to do this stuff before we close. So she went, look, all right, I'll do it, and cancelled, you know. And the plane that she was supposed to be on was the one that crashed over Lockerbie. And she was ever so grateful. Now, I know... yeah, but I also know that, you know, a lot of other people, you know, got affected by that in a sort of negative way, of course. But, you know, in my sort of wherever it was, you know, I'd not, you know, known sort of a serendipity on a kind of level like that. And I started to experience things in that very meeting, like the guy who did the chair... You know, I thought I was the only person that went to treatment in the news at the time, you know, because people were carried into treatment when I was there. 3 days later, they'd be playing the guitar. How can this guy do that? You know, I was sat like this. You know, and people would come up to me and kind of lift up my chin so I could make eye contact with somebody, you know. How do you do that, you know? Anyway, he used towards the end. But, so, But anyway, so there was a guy in the meeting, and he said, you know, he went to treatment, came out, used, and he'd been clean since. And I was like, wow, that's kind of encouraging. And then, you know, at the end, they sort of go, like, oh, volunteers, can somebody do this, somebody do this, somebody do this? You know, and I was so up from the meeting, this first meeting, I got this sort of idea that he could stay clean. Somebody sweep the floor. I'll sweep the floor. So anyway, so I was given this broom, and then everyone left. So I was in this place, like just me and this broom. And then someone just popped their head through the door and went, keep coming back. So anyway, you know, it was my first day, and then, you know, within an hour, I wanted to use again. So I go, well, what do you do now? You know, like, and I called somebody, and they said, go to another meeting. I'll meet you there. I said, okay. They didn't turn up. And, but I went, and there was a woman there who shared, like, just the most incredible sort of lucid ideas about the power of negativity in her life, how it had been. And I was absolutely mesmerized, because I had not heard anyone say that they had these kind of thoughts all the time, you know. And it was like, thank God, you know, there's somebody else is like, and I really listened to her, like, deeply, you know. And I was like, yeah, right, yeah. Yeah. And it was so inspiring that I went home and cooked dinner for like 50 people or something. And I was so, you know, so up from the whole thing. And I thought, there's something really going on here. That's just after a day. But it was like, you know, and if each meeting I went to, I think within about 5 days, I was sort of still working up the courage to say, my name's Barry and I'm an addict. And I, you know, I just couldn't do it. And then, of course, in one meeting, that moment comes, doesn't it, for everyone. And they go, like, you know, the meeting's up for newcomers now, and anyone in their first 90 days who'd like to share. And it was like the whole meeting, everyone went, that's you. Yeah. It was an awful moment, and a great moment, too, because, you know, I said, you know, I think I probably said my name's Baron Addict, and I'm frightened to death. And but then what was great was at the end, because people came over, and said, you know, and like gave me their numbers, and like offered to help, and said, you know, we know where you're at, and you know, you don't have to, you know, you're not on your own anymore. I thought, why are you moving in with me? you know, stuff like that. You know, yeah, call me 24/7. Well, not 24/7, because I'm probably gonna, you know, all that great stuff. You know, and I thought, you know what? I think I'm going to stick around. I think I'm going to stick around because, you know, people said, this can be for you a bridge to normal living. And I'd not really known what normal was at all, really. You know, my growing up years have been fraught with all sorts of stuff, you know, like neglect, abandonment, abuse, you know, all the stuff. You know, I was born with, like, physical problems. Like, by the age of 7, I'd had 4 major operations on both my hips and my arms to put them back in the sockets, because I was born and they were out of the sockets. You know, I had a shit relationship with my parents. You know, I felt like I was just left outside of everything, you know, and I felt I was just looking at the world through this glass plate and couldn't get from here to there. And the only thing that seemed to stop that was taking something from outside to put inside of me, because I couldn't find it within myself. You know, it had never been there, you know. And people in the rooms were talking about this. People started talking about this, you know. And people were saying, you know, get a sponsor, start working the steps. And I don't know if it's, you know, your basic who you are, but I can remember making this decision to just, you know, I felt, you know, like Leah said, it didn't, you know, it doesn't happen overnight. You know, probably the 3 most important words I've heard about recovery are slow, slow, and slow. But you said it. It was like still that idea of crossing the street, you know, or the idea of sitting, you know, if there was a lull in the conversation, any, you know, all of these things, you know. And but somewhere in there, I decided to just get my head down and start doing it, you know, write out a first step, write out a second step. And all this stuff was going on, but all this other information was coming in, you know. And I remember sharing about the way I felt in the meeting, and somebody who's in this room tonight, Charlie, gave me this pamphlet that was called Inadequacy. And I thought, how dare you? But everything I read in there was exactly me. I saw myself. And I saw myself a product of, like, you know, my upbringing, my outlook on the world, and what I'd done to myself, the way that I kind of got into that, you know, you talked about earlier, that place of, you know, guilt and shame, which I could only relieve by more guilt and shame, and then by more guilt and shame, you know, and all this stuff. So it was true, and I had no adequate connection in the world. So, you know, slowly over time, I had to sort of learn how to do those things. And that, for me, that was, you know, initially making a commitment to do the first three steps, because I even could go back to that very first night when I said, I'll go to NA, and I feel pretty sure that I took the first step, and I allowed, therefore, you know, the choice to come in, the right choice, and therefore I believed in something else, no matter what it was, that could possibly help me. You know, and because that was working, I decided to take the third step and stay with that, and be, you know, and see, okay, that's kind of work. You know, and I can remember, you can see it. You know, you walk into a meeting in early days, and everyone's like, you know, yeah, you're all right. And then at the end of the meeting, hey, how's it going? You're all right. Everyone's like, you know, something shifted. So, you know, something that was stuck has moved. And we bounce out in the world and we do our thing and we're all, you know. And and then it was time to do a fourth step. And I said to my sponsor, well, I've got, you know, and I had some serious sort of, well, I thought, you know, family work to do. And I had a kid who lived in Australia, and I'd been sort of, you know, I'd stayed in touch all the time, trying to do the right thing. And I decided it was time to go there. And I said to my sponsor, you know, do you think it's too early then, therefore, to start the fourth step? And he said, it's probably too late. So, but I started anyway, you know, and it was really quite painful, you know, and I sort of, like, I had to go through the shame and the guilt without picking up and sort of feel this pain and feel the rawness and feel like, you know, how did I feel about the way my sister died? You know, how did I feel about the fact that, you know, both of her legs were cut off 2 weeks before she died? How did I feel about that? You know, I was fucking furious about that. And there was people in the meetings going, I'm just off to see my sister. And I couldn't deal with it, you know. And I had to get all that out. I had to sit there and kind of feel it, you know, and know that I was going to be all right, you know. And I did, you know. And I go, well, it's a small victory. It's a fucking huge victory, you know. How did I feel about the fact that, you know, my mum acted as though she hated me, yet when she died, I couldn't fucking believe it, because I was never going to get what I always wanted, you know. Never going to get it. Where am I going to get it from, you know? Then my old man turned around to me and said, I've got cancer. I'm going to die. Three people in 3 years. How did I feel about that, you know? And then forced out, you know, you have to write about this stuff, share it, you know, cry, crying in millions, you know, 3 years in, Saturday afternoon, you know, in Lancaster Gate meeting, you know, telling people that the pain was so bad that I drove a knife into my chest, you know, that I opened my arms and that my dad had to come round and pick me up and take me to a hospital. Why did I do that? How could I hurt myself that much? And it took me 3 years of being around here, and all my share was that afternoon was weeping like a baby. And it was brilliant, because all that pain, you can't hold on to it, you know. It's got to come out somewhere. That's life. That's the responsibility of life, you know. So, steps 4 to 9 became about this whole process, you know. And so I shared all this stuff, and it was so painful. And it was that painful that I wanted something from outside to sort me out again. So then you get, you know, hit step 6 and 7 like that, boom, you know. Think, okay, I'll let all that go. And then the dustbin man truck goes past, and you go, actually, can I have that back? I'm feeling a bit dodgy today. I could use that. It's too painful, so you have to go again. You know? And then you know, all that stuff's been done on me, and it's like, me, and it was time to get out of the house, you know, step 8, step 9, fucking real. Someone said to me, watch your higher power do their thing when it comes to step 8 and 9, and it was like unbelievable, you know, first person on the list. You know, I went to America, and thought, well, I've got out of the way of this for a bit. That's great. Yeah. I had this job to do in America, and I get to the airport, get tapped on the shoulder by the first person on the list. And they're like, hi, how you doing? Have you got a minute? I just want to talk to you about, you know. And they said to me, look, don't worry about it. I've heard that you've been doing this staying clean business. That's fantastic. Just carry on with it. That'll be great. That's enough for me. I said, but, you know, I practically ate your house, you know. And this carried on, you know. And I went from the airport to this office and sat down, and I had to hire this equipment. I phoned the hire company, you know, fourth person on the list answered the phone. It was scary, and it was brilliant as well, because all these things happened, and it was almost like this thing of, like, you've come this far, go on, fucking go on, you know. And so I did, you know. I got through that step because I realised that everything I'd done to everybody else, the way my sponsor put it to me was like, how would I feel if that is what was done for me? And then lo and behold, every defect that I'd written about in step 4 and shared in step 5 became apparent to me. You know, that was the feat, you know, that was the feat, because I had this, like, but I acted it out instead of like just going like, you know. And so that was just amazing. And I think a big theme of my recovery from the point of view of, you know, general development through the steps has been, you know, finding out really who I am and what I'm about and what my weaknesses are, where I kind of fall apart, what are the things that kind of push me in the direction of addiction, you know. So I think there are all these other traits that sort of come up. Like, a big thing for me was seeking approval from other people, because I got nothing as a kid. So, you know, of course, I'm going to try and look for it off everybody else. And I can't tell you the number of times that's not worked. and still, and maybe this person. And, you know, I'm going to people, you know, going, I mean... I did this thing for about, and I'll probably do it again, of course, you know. It's going to, like, empty wells when I'm so fucking thirsty. And there's, like, nothing there for me. And I find people that don't really get me. Don't really, you know, I'm not their kind of person, you know, whatever it is. And I don't like that. And I'll go, well, that's the person I want to hang out with. Why not, you know? And I'll do it time and time again, you know. And so to counteract that, my sponsor, who kind of lives at sort of number 22 Self Acceptance Avenue, just put me on this sort of trail of, like, you know, this is the stuff you have to clear out of the way to accept and love who you are for who you are because of who you are. it's been quite a road, that one, you know, and it's still going on. But, you know, the small victories really count in recovery, and we use them to sort of, like, spur ourselves forward. And, you know, I've kind of noticed after, well, I'm coming up to, like, 23 years clean, and I've just noticed that I've started to grow up a bit. So here I am, you know, 20-odd years clean, you know, in my 50s, going, hey, you know, and feeling like a man. You know, and I've got to say that up until maybe even just a few years ago, I didn't really feel like a man. I felt like this kind of stuck teenager, and I kind of like that guy anyway, so I don't mind being that. But then there's another side, you know, that's it's new and it's developing, and I'm really embracing it. You know, I find myself doing new things, and I find myself making new mistakes, and I find myself kind of falling down in other different ways. You know. But it's making something change, you know. I can kind of tell the way the missus looks at me, you know, What the fuck was just, what was that? You know, like, yeah. You know, just doing things like different, which always before I was like, whatever. And I just couldn't quite, and it's becoming quite a sort of, you know, natural thing, and I'm really enjoying it. And I think it's like the next place where I want to go to with the sort of peace of mind that I've, you know, that's been given to me from just getting my head down and doing the stuff. You know, really, that's all it is. I'm not been, you know, not really done anything that's not, it doesn't say in the book or people, you know, sorry, people suggest, you know, I haven't really done anything like that. I've just, you know, try to get my head down and work the steps and follow suggestions. And really, you know, but I'd say that like 90-odd percent of the time when I wake up now, when I was used to sort of like, for a long while, I'd sort of wake up and then I'd sort of be all right, and then I'd feel something go, no. And I'd fall back into the AC as I was the same. And now that's gone. I kind of wake up and go like, and I do, you know, I do the same thing I did from the first day, you know, I do this sort of set of prayers and stuff, and, you know, pray, you know, to accept powerlessness and ask for my higher power to manage my life for me, because I'm not very good at that, and, you know, and a third step prayer and a seventh step prayer and a 11th step prayer, and then I bop out of bed, and I can always remember, I think, you know, what it is now, I kind of bop out of bed because I want to know what's going on. You know, rather than like going, I think I'll just stay here for a bit longer. Come on, get the door. Come on, get the door. Yeah, yeah. I generally like, you know, get out and get into it. You know, and that's just amazing to me. It's just amazing to me. I was talking to a friend of mine. You know, he said, oh, "How are you today?" And I was going to do that sort of like, "Oh yeah, yeah, I'm all right." Yeah. I said, I'm fucking great, you know, I feel great today, you know. Along with this, though, you know, but stuff gets thrown at us, you know, that we all know that, it can't, you know, whatever's going on, stuff gets thrown at us. About 6 months ago, I was working there, I've got a little work shed at the back of the house there, and I was working away, and I've got a seven-year-old boy who's like a mini-me, you know, it's just fantastic. And I had to call the school and say, can you keep him in for an extra hour and a bit in aftercare, because I've got to finish up on this job. And I was feeling really shit that I had to do that, because I go get him and we play football, you know. And I was feeling really bad. As it happened, I'd finished this job a bit early. So I went in the house. And as I'm walking through the house, I just hear this voice go, get the fucking laptop. And I suddenly realised that I'm not alone. And then I heard someone reply to that. And then I heard another voice as well. And then I looked down the stairwell and three guys were coming up the stairs, rushing towards me. And I thought, oh shit. This can't be how it ends. You know, this doesn't, you know. So anyway, the night before, my son had a friend over, and a friend and his mum, and they cause absolute chaos in the house. So I said to the missus, "Can you, on the way back from somewhere, I said, can you do us a favour? Can you whip out and unbolt the side door so I can get in with the key and go straight into the work shed?" She said, yeah, I'll just nip out and do that, because it hadn't been open for ages, you know. And I remember just as the first guy was coming at me, that door was unbolted, so I could run through the house, get out the back door and get into the side way, run down and get out that way, which is what I did. And then I was on the street, like, look, you know, in black, you know, just, I mean, you know, people say to me stuff like, well, couldn't you, when you heard them in the house, couldn't you just like quietly phone the cops? I said, it's not a fucking TV. You know what I mean? Yeah, enters house, and on hearing people, no, it's not the fucking TV. This thing just takes over, which is absolute terror. And I just remember looking at the first guy's arms and thinking, like, I couldn't even get past them, you know, let alone the other two. Now, I've got to share something else with you. This is the first time I can talk about this without folding up and going, fuck me, because I say that, now I'm going to bloody... my son should have been at home. He should have been downstairs with me. And I don't know what the fuck would have happened. And I said to the police, what the fuck would have happened? And they said, you don't want to go there. You don't want to think about that. So anyway, one bad thing was that the dog was upstairs and I found her in a corner, just like a shaking leaf, kind of like, you know, and she's still not quite right. I don't know what happened. I don't know whether they kicked the shit out of her or what. But anyway, I was able to sort of process that stuff by first going to meetings and going like, this is happening, and people going like, you know, and some people were like going, God, that's fuck, that's really terrible, you know, and other people not being so sympathetic, like, well, how aggressive were they? And then by the third meeting I'd shared it at, you know, sort of like getting in touch with the emotions of that, of what I actually felt at the time, letting that go, and then sort of, you know, then carrying on, you know. And life continues to throw stuff at me. But then I go like, fucking hell, why did I, you know, I mean, 5 minutes earlier, 5 minutes later, I wouldn't have been, you know, if my son had been, you know, all that stuff, all that stuff kind of, you know, kicked off. So, you know, I don't know what it is, but, you know, we get here, we do what we can, we're looked after, we're supported by each other, we're supported by a higher power, you know, and... end up feeling pretty fucking good most times, you know, no matter what the fuck is going on, what has been going on, and whatever your individual process is about, you know. And so that's my story, anyway, so far. You know, if you are new, please keep coming back, because when I got here, you know, I was just a splattered personality on the floor, you know. And I'm pretty good today. I do pretty all right, you know. And I love being alive. And I didn't before I got here. So I'll leave it there. Thank you very much.